Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world. With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind. Add two drops of optimism. Give it all a good hard shake and pour. Dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to everyone out there. Hello, hello, hello. Oh, a little extra vibrato there to show my kazoo talents. Thanks for joining me for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, what's woo, and what gets flushed down the loo in a world where we ask, was the cackling hyena bot wearing an earpiece during the debate? Was she coached in smirking 101 before she attempted to throw her illusionary weight? Because clearly the game plan was to goad, insult, and to bait. And the moderators were clearly biased against Trump, but no matter. I don't think it will give Lucifer's minions a bump, you know, with such hateful chatter. And the question that occupies space in our noggins. Would you rather watch another pathetic debate like last night, or stay home and eat rabbit droppings? Welcome back, Martini Heads. I have missed you all. It's been a couple of weeks, you know, and that's a long time to be without my team of Martini Heads. And to anybody joining us for the first time, you brave souls, a very warm welcome to you. But please be advised, have a sense of humor, you know, because it's a good thing to have in life. But this show is politically incorrect, so as not to erode the intellect. Your host, that's me, is a somewhat conservative, libertarian-minded spiritual counselor who will vote for Trump because America has a sacred purpose in the spiritual advancement of mankind. And the cackling hyena faction of New World Order, the morally bankrupt cast-offs who support Kamala Shamala Ding Dong Bing Bong, have only one goal: the destruction of our republic, the end of national sovereignty, the end of individual sovereignty. And that was okay, that was three goals. But those are the very principles upon which our republic was founded. Sovereignty. The smallest minority is the individualized soul, the individualized person, the individualized citizen. It baffles me that so many cannot see this. Then again, a great many things have baffled me over the past few years. How easily people crumble in fear in the face of an obvious scam is top of that list. Why people support their little inbred factions over the good of we the people is another. And we shall talk about that in today's show, because our theme for today is propaganda. What is it, and why do we keep falling for it over and over and over again? Now, I think it's important enough to stray, just for this week, from our usual metaphysical template. Although we are keeping the cocktail of the day in the show, and then we're going to focus on how propaganda works. That's the meat of the show today. I can honestly say, I've learnt a lot since 2015. What day is it? Someone tell me. Every day is Blur's day. I personally have grown a great deal since 2015. I've spent the last 8 years or so being yelled at by people who tell me they have carefully weighed their options, made educated decisions, And they cannot understand why I still support Trump. I support America, darlings. That's why. And your educated decisions are, word for word, the words used by mainstream anchors. And that shows me that your idea of research is to switch from CNN to MSNBC to NPR to BLT and then to ABC. And darlings, you see, I just have to say that's not research, is it? That's living in an echo chamber and debating in a very lively manner in this little tiny space that you have given yourselves in your heads. You need to gird your loins and have the courage to actually hit the books, to go and spend some time, you know, really doing some proper research. Pick up your own shovel and dig deep into the root cause of our current distress. And I am very much addressing both red and blue and any other colors that might be in there somewhere. Whichever color you identify with, I strongly suggest you leave the comfort of the cave and step into a bigger reality. You have made for yourselves a very small world. You hear the same rhetoric day after day. You chat with the same people day after day, on both sides, on all sides. And you have decided you hate one another and that no common ground is possible. One of you has the higher moral ground, the other one does not. And, you know, there's nothing to do about that. Oh, there's so much that we can do about this. And there is so much that is being done. And there are so many people who are resisting the inevitable change into something resembling common sense and a fulfilling life. So to the Democrat voters, I would say to most of you, because I don't know you all, I used to be a Democrat many years ago. And, you know, we all see through these things eventually, because we know that it doesn't matter really in the end what side you vote for. But now it does. So for the Democrat voters, I say you need to come to terms with the fact that Camelot is dead. It has fallen. It is dead. It is a ruin. And the last knight of the realm, Sir Bobby RFK Jr., walked away from the ruins of his uncle's legacy to join forces with Sir Donny of the Trump card. And, you know, oh, what a glorious day that was. It makes you want to sing, oh, happy day, oh, happy day, when RFK took a Donny's hand. Oh, happy day. Oh, yeah, baby. Anyway, moving on. I haven't actually had that much to drink, but I guess the singing has already kicked in. It was indeed a glorious day to see them, Sir Donny of the Trump card and Sir Bobby, on that podium together, both shaking hands, smiling brightly. Now, both men, they have exceptional auras and for very different reasons, but together, oh man, the light was magnificent and the timelines shifted and all the critters in the forest sang la 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 la, la 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 la. Now we have a hope in hell of doing something wonderful for this country. To the Republican voters, I say, please take a moment to see the magic of what is happening. The goal is to end the multi-party system. The goal is to have a small federal government staffed by citizen legislators serving one, maybe two terms max. No career politicians, for obvious reasons. Career politicians all become millionaires and increase our taxes and threaten our sovereignty. And yet every 4 years you pick a color and go, rah, 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 we believe you. Even though you have broken every single promise, every single time. What is the matter with the human race? The government has become Lucifer's playground, a lumbering behemoth of filth and depravity. We should all be jumping for joy at RFK's decision, not pouting like little children, saying, oh, well, I don't trust him. He'll derail Trump. Oh, I don't like his thing on climate change, nor do I. He will push for this and he will push for that and he will go against our agenda. Will he? What is this magic agenda of ours? You know, the man left his party. He went solo. He was trashed by his former party. He agonized about how best he could continue his excellent work in making America healthy again, because he has been at it for a very long time, people. And he realized that the only way forward is with Trump and the White Hats, because that's where the power is, because that's where the light is. The power is there because the light is there. The light is there because that's where the power belongs. And if he, Sir Bobby, could not derail the Democrats on his own party, well, he certainly won't be derailing the Trump train anytime soon, will he? People, we've got to get our heads out of our asses. The important thing is this. They joined forces because the big things, you know, like deep state, attempting mass genocide by injection, the big things, the sanctity of life, the return to common sense, they agree on those points. They are on the same page with regard to the root of the problem, and right now, that is all that matters. It matters very much that we move beyond partisan politics and start thinking in terms of one united American assembly, working to create an America our founding fathers would be proud of, or at the very least, recognize. So how do we begin? As with all things, it starts with the self. Be you religious, spiritual, secular humanist, spaghetti monster acolyte, and everything in between. To thine own self, one must be true. Our world has far too many empty vessels today, all ready to be filled up with the first notion that takes their fancy. Notions churned out by the mad matrix machinery, the state-sanctioned propaganda. Let us be sure that we each take time, every day, for contemplation. Basics, you know, who am I? Based on that, how do I present myself? Do I know who I am? Where do I come from? Where could I have come from? Do I have any ideas outside of the stories that I've been told on this? Where will I go after mortal death? Again, do I have any of my own ideas apart from all the stories that I've been told? Why did I choose an incarnation on Earth at this time? Is there more to me than flesh and blood and some ancestral coding? And if so, what am I supposed to do with it? You can't just come down here and be an NPC, a non-playing character. You chose your bloodline. You chose your incarnation. You had a purpose. It may not be to save the world from cancer or whatever, but you had a purpose for the evolution of your soul. And you're lost in the matrix of minutiae, of mayhem, of absolute bloody rubbish. We have to ask ourselves, what does sovereignty mean to me? Am I truly free? What does real freedom look like? I mean, what does it feel like? And in what way would my world be different if I chose to be fully free? With so many stories being told, how do I know which one is true? Valid point. Everything is based on our archive of stories that we've been told about something. I remember years ago when I was teaching A Course in Miracles, which I no longer teach in favor of my own version called Ego Busters. But, you know, one of the first lessons is along the line of, you know, is a chair really a chair? Is a table really a table? How do you know? Someone told you that's what it was. I think we need to get out of that safety zone. We need to use our minds a little better. Because we're not putting good stuff in there to digest and to come out with new ideas. We're becoming feeble-minded, and a feeble mind is easily influenced, whereas a sovereign mind discerns as it learns. A feeble mind frightens easily and shies away from growth, from the expansion of its consciousness. A sovereign mind sees itself as an individualized part of a greater whole, a representative of the supreme cosmic intelligence, all-powerful, created, and excited for the adventure. It is a human being's birthright to wake up each morning and be excited for the day ahead. That's the cosmic space adventure. Now, We all have the occasional day off, you know, when the blankets accept us as one of their own, and we don't want to anger them by leaving the bed. But, you know, if that's your norm and not the exception, you're not living life. You are wasting an incarnation. And more than that, you are wasting the opportunity to experience real-time liberation at the most pivotal point of history this planet has ever had, to our knowledge, and possibly ever will have. It's all because you've been propagandized. Oh, no, I haven't. Oh, yes, you have. Oh, no, I haven't. Oh, yes, I assure you, you have. I have. Everyone has. At some point in our lives, we have all been influenced, because that's what we're talking about. So let's look at all things propaganda. But before we do, please allow me to take a moment to thank Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, for graciously sponsoring the intergalactic distribution of this show. Mystical Wares is located on State Route 536 in Mount Vernon, Washington, in the beautiful Pacific Northwest, which is beautiful because it rains nonstop up here. Mystical Wares started in 2018 as an online-only store, initially offering products made from the mineral shungite, including the now famous shungite honey products. But in September 2019, Mystical Wares opened its retail store, and if you go physically to Mount Vernon, Washington, you will find it and you will go in, and it will be lovely because they have shungite. Oh my God, do they have shungite? Possibly the biggest selection outside Russia. And they're also fully stocked with all manner of metaphysical supplies. And the owner, Derek Condit, is a psychic medium and energy worker who offers personal sessions both in person and online via Zoom. Online or on location, you'll be sure to give them a standing ovation. Mystical Wares, Mount Vernon, Washington, mysticalwares.com. And jolly lovely people they are. I do know them. They're just lovely. And I have one more shout out. One more shout out to one of our martini heads, to Barbara in Zanesville, Ohio. Darling, thank you so much for the beautiful, absolutely beautiful handmade birthday card. It is a keeper. I will never get rid of it. And I thank you so much for being so thoughtful. Barbara in Zanesville, Ohio. Mwah, mwah. There's a smoochie just for you, darling. Okay, now, have I forgotten to take a sip of my drinky poo? Oh, I don't think so. I don't think that will ever happen in this lifetime. So let me do that, folks. Let me take a sip of my drinky poo to see if it's a winner or a sinner. Hold on, darlings. Don't go away. Sipping is happening. It's one of the more vintage cocktails. I have a soft spot for the old Mr. Boston books, and they taste very different to the more modern cocktails. I'm really rather enjoying this one. Yes, I will keep it. I will keep it because Metaphysical Martini is where the Holy Spirit meets top shelf distilled spirits, and that's really one of my favorite combinations. Okay, let's get on with the show. I really am getting quite good on that. No quack today, as we will sacrifice our usual format to the propaganda gods. But we shall return to the usual format next show. So send your questions to me, Arnie at arnieavedisian.com, or via snail mail to Cosmic Arnie, P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon, 97070, U.S. of A. And darlings, please don't forget to let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall refer to you as Omit Personal Details. Propaganda, where does one start? I can do an 8-hour workshop on this, but I think we only have sort of 40 minutes going forward. I start always with a definition, and my favorite place to go for a definition is the Encyclopedia Britannica, and nothing against the American encyclopedias at all. I am an American and very proud to be so, but the Encyclopedia Britannica just, it rocks, in my opinion. So if we went to them to define propaganda, this is what we would get. Propaganda is the dissemination of information, facts, arguments, rumors, half-truths, or lies to influence public opinion. Deliberateness and a relatively heavy emphasis on manipulation distinguish propaganda from casual conversation or the free and easy exchange of ideas. I like that. It's very succinct. If we ask Britannica where propaganda was first used, they would tell us people have employed the principles of propaganda, the manipulation and the dissemination of information using symbols in an attempt to influence public opinion, for thousands of years. Although the term propaganda, used in this sense, didn't come about until the 17th century, and it has something to do with Catholics, and we'll get into that later, because it would appear that the root of great many of our problems comes from Catholic Church. Okay, moving on. If we ask Britannica, where is propaganda used? Air Britannica would laugh at us and go, everywhere, darling, everywhere. Propaganda can be used in many areas. Commercial, advertising, public relations, political campaigns, diplomatic negotiations, legal arguments, collective bargaining. It can be targeted towards groups of varying size and at the local, national, or global level because it is just influencing the mind. So what have we learned from Encyclopedia Britannica class? I'll tell you what we learned. We learned that propaganda is more or less systematic effort to manipulate other people's beliefs, their attitudes, their actions, by means of symbols, words, gestures, banners, monuments, music, clothing, insignia, hairstyles, designs on coins and postage stamps, and just about everything else that you can, you know, think of. We have become rather accustomed to being propagandized. That is a bit of a problem because we're not always understanding that we are under attack, that the mind is always under attack. We think we're being educated, but we're actually being manipulated. So we really have to take this distinguishing propaganda from casual conversation and free and easy exchange of ideas very, very seriously, because propagandists have a specific goal or set of goals. And to achieve this, they will deliberately select facts, arguments, and displays of symbols and present them in ways they think will have the most effect. And to maximize effect, they will omit or distort pertinent facts or simply lie, just like the current administration is doing all day, every day, simply lying. They may try to divert the attention of the reactors, that's us, the people they're trying to sway, from everything but their own propaganda. Look here, don't look there. No, 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 look here, don't look there. You know how the press are always distracting us with, oh, look, Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. What went on while that happened, you know? So comparatively deliberate selectivity and manipulation. They also distinguish propaganda from education. Now we have a problem in our schools, don't we? Not in all schools, but in a great many schools, we seem to have these woke teachers who are not teaching both sides of the story. They are just pushing their agenda, an agenda that they have been propagandized into and probably paid rather well to share. Educators are supposed to present various sides of an issue. They're supposed to say, look, here are the grounds for doubting, as well as the grounds for believing the statements that we are making. And these are the disadvantages, and these are the advantages of every conceivable course of action. Because education is supposed to induce reactors to collect and evaluate evidence for themselves, and to assist them in learning the techniques for doing so. Is that happening? In some places, yes. In some places, no. It is not happening if your child comes home and says they can be a different sex or they can turn into a furry or whatever. That is not teaching your child common sense. That is propagandizing your child into being a depraved lunatic. However, these people, these woke lunatics, they don't see themselves as propagandists because they themselves have been propagandized. They see themselves as educators. And many of them, all of them, I think, believe that they are uttering the purest truth that there is. You know, that this is the message, people. This is the only message. You're supposed to listen to this message. My message is the most valid message. I'm the most persuasive person. Kind of crazy, isn't it? What's happening in the education system these days? We see a lot of that in the churches, of course, as well. How could you possibly question the word of God? How could you possibly question your faith? How could you? How could you? How could you? How could you? And we will talk, you know, throughout the next half hour or so about all the various methods that organizations use to propagandize us. You know, so class, what have we learned? Propaganda, dissemination of information, half-truths, lies, all about influencing public opinion. Heavy manipulation. Not a casual conversation. Jolly good. We know that propaganda has been used forever and a day, and it can be used all across the board. Interesting to know, I just want to mention this, I'm not going to go into it in any detail or whatever, but a little bit of history, it's always useful, the you know, the derivation of words. The word propaganda itself, the way that we understand it today as used in recent centuries, derives from the title and the work of the Congregation for the Propagation of the Faith, Congregatio de Propaganda Fide, an organization of Roman Catholic cardinals founded in 1622 to carry on missionary work. So at that time, I guess, and even today, perhaps, to many Roman Catholics, that word has some sort of ecclesiastical missionary feel to it, and possibly a highly respectable connotation. But, you know, it really, you take a look at what the Catholic Church got up to, facilitating the dark agenda during World War I, and certainly even more so through World War II, really helping the operations of the Nazis' Ministry of Public Enlightenment and Propaganda, I think you will see that they got rather good at it and used it to continue conning people into believing that their souls had to go through their church, their prophet, and all the tears of their saints before they could actually find any validation up in heaven. What has it done over the years that we would remember in recent history? Well, let's look about the history of communism. Everybody seems to have a different viewpoint on this word and what it means and what it does. So just a little bit of background. The term propaganda is associated with the term agitation in the history of communism. So those two terms were first used by a Russian theorist, some chap called Plekhanov. But it's Vladimir Ilyich Lenin in that pamphlet he wrote, What is to be Done, in 1902, who gets the credit for defining propaganda. In that pamphlet, he defined propaganda as the reasoned use of historical and scientific arguments to indoctrinate the educated and enlightened. Brackets, I would say, the attentive and informed publics in the language of today's social sciences. He defined agitation as the use of slogans, parables, and half-truths to exploit the grievances of the uneducated and the unreasonable. He regarded both of those strategies as absolutely essential to his political victory, and he combined them in one term, agitprop, agitprop. And every unit of historical communist parties had an agitprop section. And to the communists, the use of propaganda in Lenin's sense was commendable and honest and just good. So a standard Soviet manual for teachers of social sciences was, it was entitled, I can't pronounce the Russian right now because I don't have my right glasses and I can't see that well, but the translation is For the Propagandist of Political Economy. And it was a pocket-sized booklet issued weekly, updated weekly, to suggest timely slogans and brief arguments to be used in speeches and conversations among the masses. I think they called it the Agitator's Notebook, the Blocknot Agitatora. And again, when we're talking about propaganda, we mustn't forget to talk about the symbols that people use as a rallying point for people. You know, as the white hats are fond of saying, by their symbols you shall know them. And this is worth researching, people. This is something you can absolutely do on your own with very minimal supervision or guidance. There are so many symbols today, logos, company logos, etc., that have been identified as globalist and Luciferian. How long has all this been going on then? All of this propagandizing people? Well, I know, probably very early on. Somebody figured out how to get one over the other person and to change somebody's mind for their benefit, not to the reactor's benefit. And who knows how soon that started. We have archaeological remains all over the planet, ancient civilizations that are far more advanced than we thought once we colored them up and really thought about what was going on those landscapes. We have all these wonderful clothing, I mean, pictures of clothing, various different types of clothing that denote different social classes. We have statues, temples. We have all sorts of insignia, religious stuff. I know archaeologists are very fond of saying, well, it must be for religious ritual when they come across something and they don't know what it is. But, you know, we have all of these things that were made, and they were made not just to look pretty. You know, for thousands of years, presumably we have used these things, made these things to convince the common people of the greatness and the supernatural abilities of kings and queens and priests. What about all these instructive legends, parables, easily memorized proverbs, commandments, in all the different religions, the Ten Commandments of Judaism and Christianity, which really, people, you need to take a much better look at those because they don't really make sense the way that they're written. If you're Hindu, then there's the laws of Manu, the Manu symmetry. You know, all of these things were created to impress the people and say, look how mighty your leaders are. You should believe us and do everything that we say. And it's possible that much of what was said in antiquity comes from a point of sincerity. I think many things come from a point of sincerity, and then deep state comes along and hijacks them and turns them to a different use. You know, I don't know. Once in a while, I sit back and I take a look at history, and I say to myself, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to go back to Sumerian times, and I know I'm going to go up every 100 years and see what happened. And if you ever do watch one of those historical documentaries, I think my partner and I were watching the history of the English kings and queens once. And it's the same bloody story. Someone takes power, gets paranoid, kills everyone. The other people who like the people he killed come out, kill him. They take over. They get paranoid. They become dictators. You know, rinse, rinse, repeat, repeat, repeat. For eons, the people at the top of the tier have been working hard to keep the people at the bottom of the tier under their control. You know, so when we ask, when did we started it? Yes, we started it probably from the year dot. But when did we get savvy with it? Now I'm going to have a little drinky poo to discuss that with you. Hold on. Yummy, yummy. Okay. We do think, actually. That's part of what we do. We should probably go back to Athens, 500 before Common Era, you know, something like that. Because the study of rhetoric, you know, the technique of the orators, that was being taken very seriously there by people such as Socrates, Plato, even Aristotle. They started to build some tricks. A box of tricks for orators to use. You know, the tricks of using sonorous and solemn language and carefully gauged humor, good timing, comedic timing, artful congeniality. Oh, I love that phrase, artful congeniality. And an appropriate mixture of logical and illogical arguments. And perhaps, you know, how to flatter a jury or a mob. All of these things were formulated during that time. You know, it was Aristotle? It could have been all of them, I don't know. They compiled rules of rhetoric, you know, to make their own arguments and those of their students more persuasive. and to design counter-propaganda against opponents, and to teach their students how to detect the logical fallacies and emotional appeals of their demagogues. You know, teaching the students to figure out if they're being propagandized by their tutors. So early students of this rhetoric, they were also concerned with what contemporary analysts call the problem of source credibility. What speakers can say or do to convince their hearers that they're telling the truth. You know, oh, I'm well-intentioned, I'm telling the truth. I'm such a lovely person, I'm so public-spirited. I love puppies, I don't eat puppies, I love puppies, you know, and all of that. And, you know, and it's around this time that we got serious and we started to get really good at playing mind tricks on each other. And we sat down and figured out how to sell our product. Whether the product is a physical item or a service or an idea, it really doesn't matter. We have become very good at it. And here we are today in the midst of a full-blown propaganda war. And people should have figured this out, to be honest. You should have figured this out because you've been falling for it. All of us have been falling for it year after year for thousands of years, millions of years for all I know. Who knows the true history of this planet anyway? And you can't convince people that they've been propagandized. I've tried. And it really is true. There is no, after a while, you try, you use all your grace, you use up all your vocabulary, and you approach it every which way but lose, you know, six ways from Sunday and all of that. And eventually you get to understand that there is absolutely no polite way to tell people that they have devoted their entire lives to somebody's illusion of what their life should look like. I was desperate to find a way to break in, though. And I think that advertising, for me, was the easiest way to convince people their choices can be influenced by an outside force. And with this, you know, this was a winner. Now, let's think about it. All advertising is propaganda. It is. And it's based on three emotions. And I learned this from my partner, who, you know, is a theater school major. Rage, fear, desire. Rage, fear, desire. Look at all the advertising campaigns. Rage. Oh my God! How could they possibly let this happen? I am so angry about this. Am I really, or should I be angry about this? Everybody seems angry about it. Maybe I should be angry about it too. Yes, I have rage. I'm going to do something about this. I don't know what, but I'll do whatever the television damn well tells me to do about it because I am enraged. And then fear, which again, I will state every single time, is not part of our original makeup. A heightened state of awareness is. Fear is not. It is an error in coding. What happens when you're in fear? You freeze. You'll do anything you're told. Oh my God, how terrifying. There's some terribly badly made videos from China of people standing in the middle of the street, stopping and then just dropping dead. And yes, I believe this is a worldwide epidemic. And the other one is desire. Don't you want this baby? Everyone has one of these, baby. Isn't it really sexy, baby? Surely you want one of these. You're kind of less than if you don't have one. You do want to be accepted, don't you, baby? Rage, fear, desire. Three ego-driven, spirit-muting emotions. People who tell me they cannot be influenced, I ask them, have you ever cut out a coupon and used it? Well, they say, that's not propaganda. But it is, you see. It is propaganda in its simplest and most refined form. Because someone presented you with something that affected one of your choices. It's the quality of your mind. Your awareness and sovereignty. Those are your only protections against the hijacking of your personal choices. And you don't have to follow a spiritual path to be a decent person and make good choices. You just have to be self-realized. And you don't need religion for that. I'm just going to say, human decency is not derived from religion. It precedes it. We are all born with a working moral compass. We are, for the most part, propagandized into ignoring it, dismissing it. Back to the coupon, Arnie. Stay on track. The coupon. Well, I've never tried this new toilet bowl cleaner. Am I happy with my current toilet bowl cleaner? Yeah, I am. I've used it for years. It's very good. It cleans my toilet bowl. But they're offering $5 off the retail price to try this new one, and I like saving money, so... and they're also adding 2 ounces extra liquid. Maybe I'll try it. Well, Arnie, you say, so what? She or he saw the coupon and tried out a new toilet bowl cleaner. How is that mind control? It's not, but it is mind influence. And too much of that makes mind control easier to establish. Now, what if the product is not toilet bowl cleaner, but a bioweapon posing as a vaccine, designed to kill millions immediately and hundreds of millions over the course of the next few years by exploiting and exaggerating every weakness in a person's immune system? What about that? Is that mind influence? Or have we got to the point where we're controlling your mind because you're not sticking stuff down your toilet, are you? You're sticking stuff in your body. And you probably know what's in the toilet cleaner. But you don't know because they won't tell you what's in the injection that you're sticking in your body. What a boon for Big Pharma. Big Pharma Daddy is your dealer, not your healer. And then people say to me, because they do, Arnie, I'll be able to know the difference. How clueless do you think I am? Apparently, hundreds of millions of people were clueless, did not know the difference, and many of them are now, unfortunately, analyzing those choices in the lighted realms of heaven. Let us ask ourselves, continuing with the theme of being propagandized while actively denying that we could possibly be propagandized, would rational human beings cross oceans, march through deserts, traverse rugged mountain terrain just to go to a strange land and engage and kill the strange people there? Take all the time you want. How do you convince people to take part in such insanity? Unless you're a perceptual engineer, a master propagandist. People, we must be aware of how much our minds are influenced. The very first thing you can all do is, if you live a city life, try to find a way to get into nature on a regular basis, whether it's one long weekend a month or one day or one afternoon in the beach every 2 weeks, whatever you can manage, turn off your cell phones, turn off your computers, just go somewhere and stare at a mountain, stare at a lake, stare at the ocean, let your eyes go beyond the horizon and not be blocked by cityscapes. The effects of propaganda are dangerous. We're using partial truths or biased misinformation to shape people's opinions and control their behaviors. That's naughty. You know, we're presenting only some of the information and we're skewing it in one direction. We're failing to provide a complete and accurate picture for people to consider when deciding their opinions and behaviors. And this has got to the point now where it's not very subtle anymore. We're spreading hatred and bigotry on both sides. We are inciting violence, although the inciting of the violence is definitely coming from the left side. And we're constantly telling people they're supporting the undermining of democracy. I don't know why Americans keep talking about democracy. We're a constitutional republic. That's what the founding fathers designed for us. We are not a democracy. Democracies do not work. I will debate that with you if you wish and if you have the time. In addition to affecting beliefs and attitudes, well, we're told, as I was chatting with a psychologist the other day, and not in a professional capacity, because I'm sane, mainly, you know, propaganda has the ability to impact emotions and moods. Propaganda is designed to impact emotions and mood. Fear, rage, desire. All those emotionally charged television commercials. Okay, what about the ones where the children are dying from hunger because they're in a war zone? But you can save little Ranjit with your generous donation, which will, of course, make its way right into Ranjit's empty belly and not be laundered 10,000 times along the way. We have to be aware, my darlings, in all relationships, of people attempting to stroke our emotions. I was given a list a couple of days ago of all the terms that we are now using to describe the various techniques that we, to spread propaganda. And I'm very grateful to whoever sent this in for, I know who you are, darling, because you sent me the email. I do appreciate it, but you don't want your name mentioned. So I'm just going to say thanks for this. And this is quite a list. So I'm going to go down this and it might help us. I like lists. We all like lists. Admit it. We like a list. So these are some of the most common uses, techniques to spread propaganda. There's a great deal of name calling on both sides, on all sides. And what is name calling? It is using derogatory terms to describe an opponent or an enemy. And it's very immature. Because they always say, when you've lost the narrative and you lost the argument, slander and brute force, that's all you're left with. So you're supposed to debate someone based on the subject matter, not on their personality. The appealing to emotions, of course. Propaganda relies completely on emotional appeals to influence people's opinions, not just, you know, once in a while, not at all. They want you angry. They want you frightened. They want you enraged. They want you feeling that there's a lack in your life, and they want to get you to support a particular cause, their cause, by invalidating yours. The term bandwagoning, probably familiar to some of you, is a technique that uses peer pressure to convince people to do something. You know, it's like someone saying, oh, come on, everybody's using this toilet cleaner. Why don't you use it too? Have some acceptance. Come on, everyone's doing it. And it's like a politician also says, everyone's voting for me. Come on, you should too. To my response to that is F off. Scare tactics. Yes. Now, what are they doing with the scare tactics here? Trump, who hasn't really committed any felonies, has just done what normal businessmen do in his life, apparently is this terrible, terrifying, dangerous criminal. And if you don't vote for Kamala Schmello, a ding dong, bing bong, woo woo, a dangerous criminal will be elected. Scare tactics. Scare tactics don't work on sovereign souls. They work on feeble minds, on frightened people, on people who believe the mighty Gogglebox and no other input necessary. The manipulation of information. Well, boy, isn't that the meat of it? Distorting facts, misrepresenting facts, just to influence people's opinions. The political campaign ads these days, I'm moving on from the production of those. Here's something that we were very careful not to do once upon a time, but we're doing it all over the place all the time now, using false statistics, using false and misleading statistics, a common propaganda technique. People are saying, oh, Kamala Harris won the debate yesterday, or Kamala Harris is 25 points ahead of Trump. Clearly not. Clearly, that's all bollocks. They're just pulling it out of their arses at this point. Although I have to say, she was unusually sharp during the debate and did a very good job of insulting, smirking, sneering, and generally being a total unprofessional piece of shit. But, you know, that's an improvement on her regular stuff, I guess. They're making unrealistic promises. That's a very common technique used in propaganda. And you fall for it every 4 years. Stop falling for it, you know? Candidates are always going to end poverty, or they're always going to do this. And Kamala Schmalama, ding dong, bing bong, woo woo, is saying to everybody now, I will fix all the things that my administration fucked up. But you see, you're in the administration. You should have fixed it a long time ago. But we know that you're not here to fix anything. You're here to destroy America. We know this now. Yeah. Symbols, often used in propaganda, because they represent the idea. They sort of solidify into some sort of form, an idea, a concept. Now, the swastika of the Nazi Party, it represented its belief in racial purity. In Asia, many years ago, it represented a different kind of, it was one of unity. It was more of a spiritual practice. But the Nazis really thought that racial purity was exactly that, pure and good, and this was the best thing for them. Slogans, catchphrases, ditch the witch, make America great again, make America healthy again, make America think again. All of these things are very useful, especially if they rhyme and they stick in people's heads. And of course, advertising, which is propaganda, is all about repetition, 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 repetition. There's a technique called the plain folks appeal. Advertising is all about, hey, regular Joe, regular Jane, does this. You're a regular Joe, you're a regular Jane, do this. Every man, every woman, yes, this is what we do. Plain folks. Testimonials, God, testimonials actually really get on my nerves. I won't do them even on my website, although people have said, I'll be happy to write you a testimonial. It just doesn't feel right. And when testimonials are endorsements, often paid from famous people, people that common culture, pop culture respect for whatever reason, that's not such a good thing. When somebody who has 100 million followers on Facebook or Twitter or X or whatever it is now, they endorse someone, all those little people that follow that person are going to go, oh, so-and-so's voting for that. I'm going to vote for this person too. But they're generally false. Yeah. There's a something called the transfer technique, using positive associations to make an object or person seem more favorable. Something simple like, you could put an American flag behind you to make you look more patriotic, something that wouldn't hurt the Democrats, I think, if they, used a few more of our country's symbols, but all they want to do is destroy the country. It's basically beefing things up, mixing and matching to try and maximize your appeal. What else have we got on this thing? This is something called card stacking. And card stacking is a technique that only presents information that is favorable to the person or thing being promoted. So a company will only show the positive reviews of its product and not the negative ones, which is dishonest. And I love this phrase, glittering generalities. So glittering generalities are words or phrases that have a positive connotation, but don't really mean anything. There's a lot of it about darlings. For example, a candidate might say, I'm for change. But what change? You're not specifying what kind of change you're for. You're just talking rubbish, as all career politicians do, all day, every day, and especially every 4 years, when they're trying to be re-elected by the people that they're shafting in the first place. Another one is stereotyping. It really is oversimplification, isn't it, to describe an opponent or an enemy. All right-wing people are terribly conservative, and I have Democrat friends. Well, they're not really friends anymore because I can't be buggered with them, really. They've really annoyed me now. But I have Democrat friends who keep telling me, he's a rapist. Who's a rapist? Yes, he's a rapist. All Trump is a rapist. Is he really? All right-wing people, you want to take away the vote from women. We want to take away the vote for women? Who told you that? Well, you're against abortion. Not necessarily, but where do you get all these things from? They're stereotyping, oversimplifying, and making things rather inaccurate in the process. Then there's something called snob appeal, which isn't a technique that uses the idea of exclusivity to make something seem more desirable. Darling, you should be driving a Porsche Macan, elite edition, because only the best for you. I agree, I should be driving a Porsche. Anybody out there wants to send me a Porsche? I'd love a dark blue one, thank you. And then there's this thing called loaded language, and it's a technique that uses language to evoke certain emotions or feelings. So, for example, when someone says, are you pro-life? What does that mean to you? Because it's a stupid comment, but I mean, pro-life, it's loaded, isn't it? With emotional and moral weight. And finally, something I love almost as much as glittering generalities, weasel words, weasel words designed to mislead or deceive people. For example, now, America, I'm not saying that X is a bad person, but ... Well, it implies that the person is bad without actually saying it. What we have here, darlings, is words with no meanings. What we have here is an attempt to homogenize, pasteurize, sanitize, and whateverize everything. Nothing means anything anymore. Everything's a hodgepodge. Everything's chaos. And whoever shouts the loudest and pees the furthest, those are the people that we should be following. Are you not sick of this? And you can start to fix it immediately by stepping out of the echo chamber. Do not listen exclusively to your party. Listen across the board. And if you have time, I highly recommend that you go and look up the allegory of Plato's cave, because that will teach you what I mean by echo chamber. Darlings, I'm going to be doing a lot more on this, and I'm going to talk about all the black magic behind it, because there is black magic behind it, just as there is white magic, which we call prayer, behind all the white hats. There is a great deal of black magic behind the black hats. But I'm also very happy to say that some of you have begun to wake up, so they have less fuel in the form of your fear to feed upon. Okay, that was just a very 101 basic presentation on how you're propagandized. But what I'm asking you to do is have a think when you've made up your mind about something. How easy is it to get you to change that mind? And what does it take? Does it take you going and looking at hard evidence and reanalyzing everything? Or are you just going to go along with something for the sake of convenience, acceptance, or because someone you think is absolutely really hot says so? And my beautiful babies, we're not quite done, but we are almost done. How do the time, it just goes so fast. Oh, that's it for today. We have only just scratched the surface, but we will, you know, we'll do this again at some point. I do thank you for tuning in and spending time with a completely mad shaman who loves a drinky poo, never passes an opportunity to have one, and wants to share today's real life cocktail with you. And it was, oh wait for it, oh wait, I haven't finished my drink. Let me take a sip and then I can close the show. Hold on. Oh, that was a very big gulp and it went down the wrong way. Hold on. I have finished my drink, and now it's the end of the show. And today's real-life cocktail was the Widow's Kiss. Yes, darling, I do love my old Dr. Boston, Mr. Boston bartender guides that my late father-in-law so graciously left in the family. Here's how you make the Widow's Kiss. Half an ounce of yellow chartreuse, half an ounce of Benedictine, 1 ounce of apple brandy, 1 dash of bitters, just good old Angostura will do. Pour all of that into a shaker with cracked ice. Shake well, a hard shake, you know, shaky, 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 really good. Then strain it and pour into your favorite 3 ounce cocktail glass. You know, back in Mr. Boston's day, this cocktail was dressed with a strawberry. I served it up with a slice of a toffee apple, and that was a lot of fun. But I must say, I am open to your suggestions for dressing. I'm actually allergic to strawberries. I am Ani, mad as the day is long, Avedisian. This was a Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Mwah, 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 mwah. Until we meet again in 2 weeks' time. Don't fall for the well-rehearsed rhetoric of Satan's rabble-rousing retards. Don't allow yourself to be triggered by the rapid-fire bombardment of bullshit that passes for journalism today. And don't hide in Plato's cave. Don't take advice from people who are depraved. And above all, my darlings, let's start a new world by allowing the spirit to inhabit the human.
You have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Avedisian, The Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.